Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. My name's Jack Swindlehurst. It's been a while, and it's good to be back with you. Right, we're going to crack on today because we have got a full show for you. We are going to look at United's recent form, uptake in form. We've got Colin Calderwood in charge and steadying the ship, taking us away from relegation. I'm joined by the usual suspects. Tom Walker, welcome.
Hello, mate.
Julian Roberts.
We're back, baby.
We are. And, of course, Jordan Morland.
Yeah, hello, friends.
I bet you two are still reeling from your quiz defeat, no? You must still be pretty livid about that. Me and Tom were pretty much annihilated you.
Well, Tom annihilated us, mate. Don't get ahead of yourself. Goal-scoring hero Tom Walker won you that.
How dare you? You go back and listen to that edit, and it is a 50-50.
Well, yeah, it's funny that, because you edit it.
Yeah, that is funny, true. Yeah. We were very much like a Pyre and Cunnington. I was very much the Quezia Pyre to your Adam Cunnington.
Absolutely fine, I'll take that.
Oh, God, I remember the Sky Sports reporter with the slip-up on Cunnington's name. Still one of my favourite.
There's also that one where he calls him Donaldson.
Yeah.
But from start to finish in the opening game. Oh, and that.
No, the CUNT
one. I know the one you're talking about.
See you next Tuesday. Was just, you know, a funny bit.
I don't think she's been back at the Abbey since.
No, I know.
Bringing the podcast into disrepute already with the C word. Unbelievable.
I just spelled it.
That might be the first C word that's featured, actually, I think.
No, you said Calderwood.
Okay, so yeah, we're going to look at pick up in form and how they're doing in the table. We're going to look at the games at Port Vale and Tranmere, and then we're going to look ahead to games that are upcoming as well. We're also going to talk about new signings that have come in, and the Fans Forum and our new Fans Bet Association. So your questions will follow that as well. So plenty to go in for. Right, how are we feeling about league position and the recent run of results then, Tom?
Yeah, pretty good. It looks more comfortable, I think it's fair to say. We look a lot more solid, certainly more difficult to beat. And yeah, it's good to be a little bit further clear now, and I think we can hopefully start to look forward rather than so nervously over our shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was looking pretty hairy at one point, and there's some terrible form down there. We were talking before the show, and I know this isn't directly related to Cambridge, but of course it is, really. Notts County and Macclesfield, I still feel like both of them could stay up.
Yeah, I think you look at that, you're looking at that relegation battle, and I think the obvious candidate is Yeovil Town. They're absolute. I think we'll mention them a bit more later on, but you can say, I mean, we've managed to bring a bit of daylight between the relegation battle and us. It's kind of frustrating, isn't it, when you see how we're playing now with a bit more organisation and defensive solidity. It's frustrating. The first half of this, looking back at the first half of the season with that special word hindsight, that you're looking back at that thinking, well, you know, there is players in this team, we aren't a particularly bad side, we shouldn't have had the first half of the season that we had, possibly on paper, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, take it, three more wins, for example, that we should have got, could have got, and then, you know, Cambridge would be there with the Tranmere's, the Grimsby's, and with an outside chance of playoffs, which is where they should be aiming for playoffs. I think we'll all agree on that, don't we?
Yeah, well, fair enough. Yeah, it doesn't take too much to get into the playoffs in League Two. So, you know, sort of moving forward, I suppose, there's every chance of doing that. Just on a relegation battle, obviously said it looks a bit more comfortable. I think
big week ahead, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, obviously Cheltenham and Yeovil coming up. Yeovil look pretty beaten, I think. Obviously, they are still outside it, but just about. Macclesfield are having a bit of revival. Notts County look like they're finally showing a bit of what we maybe expected from them at the start of the season. A bit of that sort of quality coming through.
Beating Mansfield is a bit of a statement as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you throw all the money at it like they did in January,
you would
expect some sort of return.
But then again, after we beat them, I'm happy to admit that I came out of that thinking they are gone. There's no, we're like that.
Yeah, they look bad, didn't
yeah
they?
That second half especially, they didn't really offer anything. I think they were 8 points adrift at that stage.
Yeah.
I didn't think they had.
They needed some time for those new players to gel a bit, didn't they? Which seems like it's starting to happen. And it just, I don't know. It looks even more interesting that our last two games of the season are Morecambe and Macclesfield. Mm. I mean, hopefully it'll all be done and sorted for us at least.
Hopefully we can send Morecambe down.
That would be great.
Would be enjoyable.
That's what I want.
Send Kevin Ellison a nice card if that happened.
Yeah.
That sounded really sinister.
It wasn't meant to be that sinister. I mean, it would be rude, but it wouldn't be anything. It wouldn't be like anthrax or anything.
You're too cheap to post anyone a card, Jack.
Yeah, it'd be an e-card. One of those free ones.
I think, the last few weeks has been a lot more sort of confident and organised under Calderwood. Mm. So that's been really sort of pleasing to see. And it's also been really pleasing to hear him after games clearly wanting more from the people that that sort of gone out there and played. And I think we've been playing at times better attractive football as well. We seem to be making use of Hepburn Murphy's pace and sort of breaking quicker, which has been enjoyable. But yeah, it seems like there's confidence around the team, which we didn't have sort of 5 weeks ago.
It's interesting, it's refreshing as well. His, he obviously came in January with a very, very clear idea of what he wanted to do, to this, what he wanted in the side. And I mean, I think by and large, I'd probably, I don't know if, would you have signed a keeper in January?
I think that, that was something that was probably the area that, if budget allowed, you'd have liked to have looked into.
Yeah, that's what I'm
at the very least. But do you know what? Mittal's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Certainly against Port Vale was very good. Didn't have a lot to do against Tranmere, but what he did well.
Yeah.
And I'm almost at a point with the kind of goalkeeping situation now where I'd rather watch Mittal playing and making mistakes because he's still got some way to go to learn rather than perhaps Ford, who won't necessarily get better now.
Yeah. No.
I think if you'd known during the transfer window that Ford would then be injured for a few weeks, you definitely would have said, you've got to sign a keeper.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the fans forum later on in the pod, but Coldwood said that he wanted a striker, a winger and a central midfielder. So
he's got all of those.
He got all of those. He didn't say anything about wanting to get a keeper. Maybe he was giving a political answer, but it didn't seem
to
cross his
mind. They seem to rate Mittal highly, though. You know, they gave him quite a long contract. I can't remember when it was, but sort of previously, I think he's probably got another couple of years to go on that. So they obviously see, and you know, he's played, for, I think, for sort of a youth international level as well.
Exactly. So he must have had potential.
Yeah, he's got kind of a good pedigree, and it looks like he's starting to hopefully make that sort of number one spot his own, and it's kind of his to lose now.
And he came from Charlton, who have quite a good sort of academy.
Yeah, of course.
Like a history of bringing players through. So.
Nick Pope came through Charlton as well, didn't he? So
it's also good to see him playing. It's nice to see him playing in behind an actual, a way more organised back line.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think I know there's a few occasions where Mittal's making individual mistakes that are kind of nothing to do with what's going on with the centre half, but he looks a lot more assured in himself. He made a few decent saves yesterday against
Tranmere. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, Coldwood's getting the best out of players who perhaps weren't performing under Joe Dunn, and one of those, in my opinion, and we'll talk about him later, is Gary Deegan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really kind of working backwards. Like, Deegan is performing better, which is getting the better out of Taft, who's then getting the better out of an unexperienced goalkeeper behind him.
I think it all goes back to this point that if you're making that many individual mistakes as we were in, let's say, September, October, it gets to a point where they're not individual mistakes anymore. They're not individual mistakes anymore. It's symptomatic of a bigger problem behind the scenes. You look at George Taft now compared to then, they look like completely different players.
That tackle yesterday,
I mean, it was spot on, wasn't it? It might be one of the best tackles I've ever seen.
We'll talk about that tackle in detail, I think, when we cover the Tranmere game, because there's a few things I want to say in it, and I think we had, in the NRE, the best angle of that. It was a thing of beauty. But we will come to that. But talking about the improvement of the squad, let's look back then. A little note about the Northampton game.
Mm-hmm.
That was absolutely crazy. Scenes that haven't been seen at the Abbey for a long time in that respect, the ending of that game.
Yeah, so good. I think 95th minute to get a winner, obviously, against Northampton. We have got a very good record against them recently. And then, you know, I think the kind of best thing about that was that we'd obviously beaten Notts County away the week before, and it's almost one of those where it's good to go and win at Notts County, but then it's about following it up.
Mm-hmm.
And to get a win like that, mm-hmm, against a team like Northampton, you know, something of, I guess, kind of like a local rivalry to some extent. And the way that we kept coming back as well, it showed really good character.
You kind of forget that we were behind twice in that game. Mm. We'd missed a pen. Like, the sort of headline you sort of take from that was the last-minute winner. But, yeah, we were chasing the game pretty much the whole time. And I guess it kind of comes down to that sense of belief amongst the players now to not sort of give up. And I think that's a bounce of having Calderwood in charge.
It's also, it's like, as you say, following Notts County on from what was always going to keep, if you look at the end of the season, I think what will separate teams that end up in lower mid-table quite safely is home form.
Mm-hmm.
And the more and more the season goes on, you see our home form is just getting, kind of just getting better and better. It's really consistent. So it's really good to see us following up a really important win like Notts County with what is a bit more, should have been maybe a bit more of a routine victory in that sense. Something you might expect to win. But we actually did go and win, is what I'm saying. Being a goal down twice, and obviously that last minute winner, it's just really good to see.
I was just going to say, kind of building on that point about home form, I think really good thing to bring up. That's going to be what kind of makes us survive this season, isn't it?
Definitely.
You know, and I think it's good that we've got ourselves into this kind of position now where if we do sort of okay at home, we don't really need to do anything away. And that's good because we've still got some very, very tough trips coming up. Like, we've still got to go to Bury, we've still got to go to Mansfield, and, you know, there's other kind of tough games away from home as well. So if we can get ourselves into a situation where we can almost go into those games thinking, do you know what, anything's a bonus.
There's only really one home game before the end of the season that is scary, and that would probably be Colchester at home. They'll bring a lot of fans, they're in the playoff picture. But given that we've got a good result against Tranmere, who aren't fully out of the playoff picture yet, and, you know, Northampton and Stevenage were close to the playoff picture when we beat them at home, it gives us that sense of belief that actually we shouldn't be worried about where teams are in the league when they come to the Abbey, because we'll give them a game.
Absolutely. And I mean, following on from that, there was a pretty predictable loss at Exeter, a 1-0 loss that, you know, it's a tough place to go and win, especially given where they are in the table. And, you know, it was going to stop at some point, that fantastic run. But then it brings us on into February. And of course, talking about that home form and beating teams at home, making it a fortress, keeping a clean sheet and beating Port Vale was huge for Cambridge United.
It's huge in the sense that Port Vale have really managed to get themselves involved in this relegation battle, so it became somewhat of a 6-pointer, really.
It absolutely was a 6-pointer, wasn't it? And it wasn't great to watch, but that didn't matter. All that mattered was the result, which we got.
Which is probably the big difference that you notice between Calderwood and Dunn, the way we play. Often, maybe we don't play quite as attractive or maybe loose football. Like, there's not so much sort of gung ho attitude. There's a lot more organisation. There's a lot more two bank. You see a lot more two banks of four.
Mm.
But we're getting good results against teams like that. We're scrapping to results. It's that winning ugly thing, isn't it? They always say league champions win ugly. I'm not saying we're winning the league. I'm saying good teams always seem to win ugly.
I remember my first clean sheet.
that Port Vale game, though, was just such a League Two standard game. It was, like we said, ugly. It was scrappy. The conditions weren't great on the day. It was quite frustrating at times, but it was really keenly contested, and actually maybe underdone. We would struggle to give that sort of kind of levels of contesting the game against sort of people who had sort of come to the Abbey determined to sort of play. And I don't know, we got lucky in Port Vale as well. Like, Pope missed a really point blank chance, and but, you know, we've started to get a little bit of luck as well, which we've obviously haven't had prior to Christmas.
No, the rub of the green, it goes with you.
The Amu deflection, obviously, nice bit of luck there.
And Port Vale had a goal disallowed as well. I think it was Tom Pike. I didn't have a great view
Pope,
on how,
it? Yeah.
how kind of, whether it was or it wasn't offside.
Well, if you stand in the habit, mate, you get a great view.
Yeah.
And it was tight. It looked kind of level to me.
Yeah.
Good job you went the lino.
Yeah.
It's good, really. And just kind of on Port Vale a little bit, I think they look like they're doing their best to get themselves involved in a bit of a scrap at the bottom.
They lost to Morecambe yesterday, which is crazy. Yeah.
And again, you know, I think they actually missed a penalty in that game as well. So if Tom Pope's not doing the job for them, then they're going to have problems, because he's kind of the guy, isn't he, at Port Vale. And bit of a cloud over him as well, it looks like. So they could be another one who kind of get dragged into that. There is usually one, isn't there, who
drop a little bit and
get themselves involved. And it looks like it's going to be them this year. So it's just about kind of scrapping to the safety for them. But I think, pretty much bang on kind of on that game, really. Just it was good solidity, really, more than anything. Mitov was excellent. You know, we kind of mentioned it previously, and it's so good to see for him, because I think when he's played, and he's never really had kind of a consistent run of games in the team, not certainly over kind of like an extended period of time, and when he has played, certainly this season, it's been quite difficult for him.
Yeah,
I remember the Exeter game, for example, where, you know, he'd have been disappointed with his performance there, and it's good to see that he's possibly started to put a bit of a stamp on that kind of number one spot, really. And yeah, like I kind of mentioned earlier, he's kind of got the rest of this season, I feel like, now, and it's his to lose, basically. Yeah. For the next season.
The thing that Mitov's not had compared to, say, a Will Norris of a few years ago is he's not been out on loan. He's not spent some time in the conference playing regularly. So these two starts have come, you know, basically cold, really, haven't they? Like, we've not played a checker trade game for a few months. So, yeah, fair play to him for sort of taking his opportunity. I have found it really worrying that the two starts that he's had, he has gone down injured twice, and we've stood there thinking, shit, Kevin Pilkington's got to come on at the age of 44, not playing a game for however many years.
To be fair, there was actually a point in the game yesterday against Tranmere where he went down injured kind of later on, I think probably around 70, 75 minutes. And I thought, and I said to you, Julian, sitting in the NRE, oh God, Pilkington's going to have to come on. Yeah. And then Julian said to me, well, actually, we've just made all three of our subs.
Yeah.
So actually, it'll probably...
Who would you put in goal?
Well, I actually said Jabbo, but I think it probably would have been one of the centre-halves.
It would have been Taff.
Taylor or Taff.
I think it would have been Taylor.
It's always a joy, isn't it, to see that?
I love it.
Not so much when it's your team, but...
No.
I remember Liam Hughes kind of going unbeaten, yeah.
I remember John O'Shea going
in. Almost got handed up anyway.
I remember Paul Wanless doing it a few times, and he actually put in some great performances in goal.
But I think...
That's why he's got his name on the front of the NRE, mate.
Yeah, it's just for that. He's actually
stuff
got
like
the goalkeeper thing. So.
I think Phil Jagielka going in goal for Sheffield United, that's the best one. Because he had an absolute stormer as well.
Yeah.
Maybe we should sign him.
Yeah,
get Jagielka in, if you're listening, Phil. But... On the points that you've all been making, it's all kind of connected, but Mitov playing well behind a really good defence and making the home a fortress is really important. And Cambridge United, up to now, have now got 6 clean sheets in 10 home games, which is huge, which makes the Abbey a really difficult place to come to and score and beat Cambridge. And that, is, like you say, is going to be the thing that keeps them up. And Amu has been integral in that. We should give Dave a shout because he's been really good.
It's really good to see him not be a bit more of a... regular inclusion, less of an impact sub.
Yeah.
Because he is obviously like he has his strengths coming on as an impact sub. If it was a bit of a Joe Dunn classic, wasn't it? If you're looking for a goal
chuck
after about
on.
70 minutes, chuck him on the right, stick it down to him, and he can beat if he's up against a tired left back. That's not the sort of sub you want to see come on. But I think he's got enough qualities to impact an entire game.
Yeah,
and
of course.
I mean, we've seen over the last couple of games.
The differences between Port Vale and Tranmere was they knew
Tranmere.
They knew how to deal with Amu. Like, Amu got found out against Tranmere, whereas Port Vale really struggled against him. And I can't make my mind up about Amu because, when we were prepping the pod, I wrote the resurgence of Dave Amu, but then it's like it's not really a resurgence because he's had such a stop-start time at the club.
Mm.
We've not really had him playing, you know, every week, starting every week, playing most of the game. So it's, you know, a year and a half into his time at United, we're only now properly getting to see what potential he has. And
I personally think he's a really, really dangerous player to have at this level. I really think he's such a dangerous asset to have.
He's the sort of player that you want to see as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he's
that direct winger.
Fun to watch. You know, we've talked a lot about wingers on this podcast, and obviously we had Mingoya last season, who I know that we were fans of.
Beautiful.
Frustrated some people because he wasn't in that Amu mould. Mm. And I do get that, to be honest, to some extent. Mingoya was a great player and he did really well for us, I think, over the course of a couple of years. But it's so good to see a winger who will just try and beat the man every time, and a lot of the time he does it as well.
The thing is, like Mingoya, if you've got an out-and-out target, someone, if you're going the target man route, Mingoya had a better cross on him than Dave Amu has. Mingoya could dig across out of nowhere, but I know exactly what you're saying. It is more,
and he could do it from deep as well.
He could do it from
Mingoya,
anywhere, each foot. But Dave Amu is a very different sort of prospect to watch because you just watch him just attack a left back and go to the byline and put some sort of cross in. I think it's just great to watch.
We talked about Hepburn Murphy's pace as well a little bit earlier. I think you mentioned it, Jordan. It's good to have, like, you know, if we're going to be building our base essentially around having, you know, a nice solid back four, being hard to beat at home. It's so good to have players like Hepburn Murphy and Amu, kind of those two in particular, on the break.
Yeah,
because there were so many times yesterday where you look at Hepburn Murphy sort of making runs down the channel and Amu doing a similar thing kind of on the other side, and like that's dangerous at this level. It's so dangerous.
It's best, especially playing this 4-4-2, which he obviously likes,
mm-hmm.
rather than having, we don't have that Giovanni Brown who's sort of flitting around in between a striker and a centre midfielder. It's a bit more sort of structured than that. It's a bit more.
Yeah. Sorry, you know about Amu getting better and being more integral and making Cambridge better. I was having to think yesterday, does this mean for Reggie Lamb that his days at Cambridge are numbered, or at least his days as a starter in this lineup are numbered? Because he now seems like away from the team sheet. Like when we were.
Well, he's been injured. But
yeah. I don't know, but
I think he would struggle to.
Are we missing Lamb?
No, I don't think so. I thought when he came on, if we want to bring this on to Tranmere, I thought when he came on yesterday, he really didn't offer much for me. But my main thing, and you guys might have a better answer to this than me, is like, what is his best position? Is he a right winger?
Well, I think it's the same as Brown, isn't he? Like,
but he's not as good as Brown. 10, so when
central.
Carlisle fans say that as a cam, because they did play him out wide as well, but like, yeah, just behind a striker kind of where he played. He didn't score many for Carlisle, but he was the type of player where he like popped up at regular points and scored important goals. Mm. So he kind of did enough.
I like Reggie Lamb. I think he's a very kind of tidy player and someone who's good to have in your team at this level, really.
Sure, but I don't think he'll get into the starting 11.
Possibly not. You know, he may well not do, but you know, again, you know, I think he's a decent player to have around the squad, and
yeah, sure.
If that's going to be his role, then that's going to be his role. And I think you're probably right that if your options are Amu and Brown, he's probably not getting into the team at the moment. And the only way that's going to change that is if he comes off the bench and starts playing really well. And I thought against Tranmere he was a bit ineffective.
Yeah, I thought we lost a lot. I mean, if we want to go into that, let's talk about that substitution because I thought it was it's quite a bitty game. There wasn't a lot of clear-cut chances. It was quite a tense game, really, wasn't it? I thought we were quite well matched. And the one thing that we were doing quite well towards the end of the second half was breaking quite quick with Amu and Hepburn Murphy, as you say, Tom. And in one swift movement, three substitutions, we managed to take every ounce of pace out of our
team. It's crazy, wasn't it? Like,
I suppose, because we were talking about this at the game, and I think we agreed on that. I suppose looking at it from a slightly different angle, at that point, I think we were just essentially lumping hopeful balls up.
We were going
in the direction
of
Hepburn Murphy, and maybe you want someone like Jones up front who offers maybe a bit more of kind of a presence who can kind of help out. And
I just thought we looked even a bit blunt after that. I thought we didn't really have a.
I personally would have liked to have seen Jones on the pitch with, say, an Amu or a Brown on the wing, because I think Jones, and admittedly we've not seen enough of him to fully know, but I definitely think there's a proper striker in there, and I think he'd look better. I think he would be a striker that's better with sort of balls played ahead of him, whereas he came on and he was having balls played into feet, like how Jabbo and Hepburn Murphy have been sort of playing. So I would have liked to have seen him play with, say, someone like an Amu or a Brown who could get round and sort of put a ball into the box ahead of him. I don't know. I think the thing with the game yesterday, and it was the same second half against Port Vale, we first half had this real abundance of pace, breaking with pace. We were, you know, pressing with pace. And he seemed to just take we seemed to, in the second half of both those games, kind of take the foot off that kind of momentum and slow things down. And against Port Vale, we had a lead to hang on to. But against Tranmere, I was kind of a bit sort of perplexed as to why we'd done that, because I thought we were on top first half against Tranmere. It wasn't something that I sort of agreed with. And then, yeah, with making three subs in one go, I don't know, sometimes it kind of disrupts the play more than, say, making one or two subs at the same time, having three new bodies on there. But, you know, like Tom said, we were going long. Calder was obviously spotted that we needed to try something different to change it up. So I guess it takes balls from him to roll a dice like that.
I mean, possibly more than anything, he was just trying to preserve a point, wasn't he?
Well, the other thing as well is we've got two games next week.
Yep.
Yeah.
And arguably not losing to Cheltenham and Yeovil is more important than not losing to Tranmere.
Because I thought it was a very good point, regardless of everything. I thought I was more than happy with the point yesterday. Yeah. I think it's a little bit frustrating because I thought we could have, you know, maybe a little bit more, if he'd have gone for it a little bit more, we possibly could have got the win, because I don't think there was that much between us. But as you say, look at this week, I think it's more important to concentrate on beating Cheltenham and Yeovil, because that's going to have such a direct impact.
But I wonder how Jabbo will get on, because he obviously has struggled this season playing twice in a week.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he'll play Tuesday night. I wonder how effective it'll be on Tuesday.
I think we'll see some rotation on Tuesday. Yeah. I'm calling that now.
Well, on that, a lot of people around me were saying that they would have taken Maris off yesterday afternoon.
Maris was pretty non-existent yesterday.
He put in a good defensive shift, but he was pretty non-existent going forward. So I wonder if maybe we'll see a change in the centre of midfield.
Well, speaking of centre midfield, I think the one thing that I'd love to highlight yesterday, and this, I'm not as big a fan of him as Jack, but I thought Gary Deegan yesterday was honestly quality. I thought everything he did, he ran that position in the way that often he doesn't. He often seems a bit sort of he's just running around, he's bouncing around all over the place.
He chases shadows sometimes.
Sometimes, and he's just putting in a late challenge here and there, and he's put in good performances this season. But what he seemed to do so well yesterday was he was so much more calm and assured when he had the ball. Normally, the one thing with Deegan is he'll nip the ball off a striker and then manage to give it back straight back to the winger or play a really loose ball. But everything he did, like there was a couple of roulettes at the centre of the park.
There were a couple of Deegan moments. I remember second half he ran short for Dunk to at a throw-in and he went to pass it back to Dunk and just put it straight out.
Yeah, fine.
But for the most part, Deegan yesterday was quality. He won balls, he kept possession, he kept us ticking over. And he really... Like we were saying at the start, it's crucial to that sort of stronger defensive line.
It's definitely, that positional. He just wouldn't let them find pockets of space on the edge of the area, which you often see teams.
Question for you though, Deegan yesterday, better than Tom Champion, would you say? Because I know you love Tom Champion.
It was more of a Tom Champion-esque performance, but I think he's got a long way to go.
Accurate, actually, to be fair. Just a note on the Man of the Match award yesterday. It was given to Gary Deegan, and I met a couple of people, including Sean Grady, last night, and the guy from AstraZeneca, who was sponsoring the match, gives the Man of the Match award, and he said the club wouldn't let him give the Man of the Match award to the Tranmere keeper, which was the plan of the people, because they were all a bit...
Scott Davis, what a bell end. Like, absolutely.
Cutting edge analysis.
Mate, fantastic shot stopper. Like, there was a couple of saves in the first half, which were brilliant. But my God. I mean, I don't like him, and I didn't like Tranmere's tactics. It was very Lincoln-esque, but I'd like to point out I wasn't the person who stormed the press box to have a go at the Tranmere social media team because of Scott Davis's behaviour. So shout out to whoever that was. Behave yourself.
I think that's a great way to go about it.
Yeah.
Direct.
Very direct.
I thought Tranmere were quite odd, actually, just kind of on them. It reminded me, a lot of us under Derry. Mm-hmm. Sort of quite comfortable in mid-table, but I looked at, like, from pretty much minute one, like, Davis was kind of time-wasting, he was going down with injuries. And you're thinking, why aren't you trying to beat us?
You've
got to lose?
You've still got a sniff at the playoffs here. You've got the division's top goal scorer. He's the sort of player that doesn't need...
He was in Taff's pocket all day.
He was, We didn't really see... I mean, that tackle was amazing. I thought that was 1-0 at that stage. When you give someone like James Norwood that sort of space, well, obviously, for a very brief moment. But I think you're absolutely right, Tom. Like, if I was a Tranmere fan, I'd be a bit...
Their away form is like, what, 1 win in 9 or 10 after yesterday? Yeah. So it's... It seems bizarre that they're not going for it more away from home to try and...
They're the top scorers out of the playoffs, aren't they? So, that you know, they've got the ability in Norwood. That player is hot. And on that, I mean, that was the gilt edge. That was the big chance. And then Taft, out of nowhere, gets there. And just a beautiful tackle.
We were saying that if he tried that tackle in September, he probably would have ended up...
Walking down the tunnel.
But he'd have scythed Norwood down about 20 minutes late, probably, as well.
And somehow the ball would have gone in as well.
Off him, yeah.
Talking about walking down the tunnel, Halliday at the end looked like a red from the Habin. I don't know you guys from the NRE view.
I think the tackle was probably...
Because he'd just been fouled and he didn't get that. So obviously he was annoyed, but...
That's what I was going to say. I think
it was a red.
I think the tackle was probably worth the yellow card and I think that was the right decision. But what would have swung it for me as the ref is that it was just intent.
It was completely malicious. It was late and high. And I think even in and of itself... He's so late to the ball.
But it was an awful challenge.
The context of it, I think it definitely was.
Because up until that point, I would have had Halliday as a contender for Man of the Match. Probably Deegan and Taft ahead of him, but third choice would definitely been Halliday. And I think he's another one who's improved under Calderwood.
We were talking about this yesterday. This nice to see Halliday playing like he was doing last season or previously how we've seen him play in the Cambridge United show, which this year
I'm not, I mean, he's not been the only one, but he hasn't shown that sort of electric form going forward and back and defensively. But yesterday, it was a lot better.
It's probably quite hard for him actually this season because, you know, you think he was obviously with Accrington for a year and then with us. So he, obviously, we were speaking about Pierre Mingoya. He's lost really the person that's been playing in front of him for probably the last three seasons.
It's true, yeah.
So it's probably taken him a bit of time. And, you know, we said David Moyes obviously had a bit of an in and out season.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that's maybe some reason behind kind of poor form. And it's taken a long time to maybe adapt.
Dan wasn't always playing wingers in front of fullbacks as well. Mm. We've sort of experimented with formation throughout the start of the season.
I don't think Brad Halliday wants to play for Cambridge anymore.
No,
I think you're right.
I think that's probably true. Well,
which is fine, and I think his performances under Calderwood have improved like vastly, but I think there is an element of him not wanting to live in Cambridge or play for Cambridge United anymore, mm-hmm. and I think that has affected what the Brad Halliday we saw last season. To what the Brad Halliday is.
I thought
this
that was
season.
Something that was public, wasn't it? That he was homesick.
Yeah, no, it is.
I don't know. I think there's, I suppose, a worry there that kind of narratives start to become a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's been made public. I don't think that's something that he said. I don't think anyone from the club said it. It's just maybe.
I think
when a player's on form, which is worse than what you might expect, I think just speculation happens, and that maybe would be the case. I don't know. But.
Isn't his hometown Middlesbrough? Who wants to go back and live in Middlesbrough?
Maybe he's missing Parmos. We've had Parmo before.
Oh, no, is that the never. Battered? The
chicken, like chicken lasagna never battered.
But on the subject of Halliday, and we're going to talk about the fans forum later, but I feel like it would sort of splice itself in throughout the pod. But it was discussed at the fans forum about players' contracts who are up at the end of season and are they actively looking to try and renew them. And the impression that we got from Ben Strang was that Maris and Halliday will be offered new deals. The club rate them. They want to keep them. Obviously, there's part of offering them a deal to make sure that you get compensation because I think they're both of age where we could get a tribunal fee, I think.
They're probably both going to Scotland. They will get absolutely
rich.
That's
but it is, it's the club's intention to try and keep hold of them.
Interesting.
Good.
That's good because they're probably two of our best players. So.
Well, there's a question about that. Should we save that for the question section or should we do it now? Cause
go on, let's do it now.
We're warmed up about it.
Let's do it.
So, hang on. Who asked it? Patrick. Which pair would you prefer to keep? Amu and Brown or Halliday and Maris?
Amu and Brown, for me, categorically.
Yeah.
It's tough. I wouldn't be that...
It's tough, actually, isn't it?
It's not tough because of, you know, Amu and Brown. It's just Brown. I think he's quality.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to lose him. We may well lose all four. So
yeah,
too much for saying it.
Maris failed a medical. You know, he was on his way out. Halliday wanted to leave. For me, I feel like Amu and Brown are more happy and therefore, well, I think
of the four, Amu has the better chance. So I'd like to keep him for that.
I'd probably go Moon Brown as well, though. I think, as Tom says, on the basis of Giovanni Brown.
You can build a team around Giovanni Brown.
He's a game winner.
Yeah.
But the thing with Halliday is, like, I personally think on his day he's probably the best right back in the league. And whereas Maris has the sell-on potential, I don't think he's the best central midfielder option. I think in a 4-4-2, I think we could find a better player.
I think he's replaceable.
Yeah, exactly. He's replaceable.
I also think Brown has the potential to be one of the best wingers or attacking midfielders in the division.
The thing with Brown is I'd say keep him, but play him in his best position, which is in number 10. Like
threw a bit of a hissy fit when he got subbed.
Yesterday.
No, the game before Port Vale, and apparently Calderwood gave him a bit of a rollicking. If he can sort his attitude out, you know, the world is oyster, really. But hopefully we can keep, all four of them. But as Tom said, there is a possibility we could lose all four of them, which would be a nightmare. And just the last bit on that quick-fire question for you. Have you seen a better tackle than that George Taff tackle?
Not a long time.
Yeah, well, at the Abbey, not for a long time. I remember when we were in the conference, and I'm pretty sure it was a Stevenage home game. Someone, and I think it was Anthony Tonkins, did an absolutely worldie last minute challenge. But
that
was a long time ago.
Unbelievable. That's a quality answer.
Really good that.
That's super.
I can't even think of one. I can't think of one from.
I don't think there's that many times when, like, as a central defender, I think usually you look at a performance And whereas like a striker, you look at that moment, like a goal. And that's, it's good to see, you know, Taff getting something like that. Because, you know, for a defender, that's probably as good as a goal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
saving.
Yeah. No, it was really, really good. Probably the highlight of the game, to be honest.
And considering, we were saying this earlier, considering that Tranmere spent pretty much the whole game complaining about things, the fact that Norwood got challenged and then didn't do anything, didn't react, didn't ask for a penalty. He knew that he'd just been caught brilliantly. I think that just sort of added to it.
Yes! That was a goal!
So coming up in this part, we're going to take a look at the fans forum which Cambridge United held. The club moving forward, trying to aid relations between fans and the club themselves. Jordan, you attended there. What was the outlook? What was the headlines from that?
I did attend. It was really good. There was about 60, 70 people there. Godrick Smith said that this would be something they'd look to do maybe 2-3 times a season and just talk about footballing things, and then they would have other kind of forums to talk about non-footballing things like the AGM and the Fans Parliament kind of meetings would be kind of broadcast to everyone, which would maybe bridge the sort of gap between playing and also off-field stuff. Yeah, it was good. There's a brilliant write-up on the UTAS website. Thank you to Ryan for writing that. So check that out if you haven't read it already. But yeah, I guess the main there was a few headlines. The first one for me, and at the risk of angering people on Facebook and those who absolutely hate Ben Strang, but he actually came across really well. Spoke really professionally about about what's gone on. It was very forthcoming with answering a lot of questions. He at one point sort of, you know, made it obvious that he was aware that there was criticisms of him and he accepts that, and he's looking to sort of, you know, justify his role and the club set up through, you know, how we go forward from here. Colin Calderwood came across brilliantly, really, really great sort of listening to him. He obviously is a football person. He could talk football for a long time. He was very positive about the setup of the club. Very positive about our head scout, Alex Fraser, I think his surname is. It transpired that he joined us from Spurs, where he was a scout for them. He was really, Calder was really positive about Ben Strang and the influence that he has. Well, the amount of work that he can sort of leave to Strang to do, you know, the talking to agents and all those bits and pieces, which could sort of, you know, bog down his time, especially during transfer windows. So that was really positive. There was a good talk about the youth team setup, and Bonner talked to us at length about that. There was quite a few questions around why young players weren't breaking into the team, and so it was a really good sort of conversation about that. And the general sort of feeling is that there is a couple of waves of really talented youngsters who are going to be coming through in the next few years, but because of our club's limitations around budget and what ranking our academy is, they are sort of limited to sort of game time. But Calderwood is keen to sort of have them in and around the squad, have like a sort of a smaller squad of sort of experienced players and pad the rest out with youth. And he's done that at sort of Northampton before, and he did it at Forest as well. He made a good anecdote about is it Bradley Johnson, who was a United youth team player. Calderwood then picked him up at Northampton, and he went on to play in Prem for Norwich and Derby. So he made a good sort of reference around how he does like to sort of bring youth players in the right way.
Mm. That is the sort of thing, just very quickly on that, is exactly the sort of thing that's going to win fans over.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff, like promoting your youth academy. Was there a note somewhere about them expecting or hoping that the current crop of youth players is going to be far better than the Barry Colson?
That's what I was saying. They've got, they were sort of talking about how they sort of structured the academy a few years ago and how they now believe that the next few waves are going to be really talented lads. And we saw in the week that a 16-year-old has just signed a permanent contract for 6 years, Joe Neal.
Yeah.
So I think that crop, rather than say the guys who are kind of 18, 19 now, but sort of the crop, the next sort of not generation because that's a long time away, but the next wave of sort of players coming through, they've got a lot of sort of hope around that. Elsewhere, what else did we talk about? I guess the biggest headline from the night, and I know everyone is excited to talk about this, was the admission that there were five clubs in for Adi Aziz. Ben Strang dropped the ball a little bit by accidentally revealing that one was Yeovil. That got quite a reaction from the sort of 60, 70 people who were there in attendance around just how many people who were interested into him.
I've heard that there was quite, you know, like Exeter and teams like that were in for him as well.
Do you know what worries me about this?
Have I been watching a different player?
But do you remember Joe Piggott?
Yeah.
That's what worries me.
Piggott, to some extent, had scored goals previously.
Yeah.
True, yeah.
I don't know.
Don't get it. And the thing is, it's not like with Adi Aziz, it's not like he was just playing in a bad team. When he was playing for Wimbledon, he was part of a promoted squad, right? Mm-hmm. He's playing in a decent team, and even there he didn't score goals.
I think he...
Apart from the one against us.
I think he has a problem with like the size of the game. I think he's fine on a tiny stage when there's no one watching, you know, like he's in the checker trade. Mm. And then as soon as, you know, he's on the main stage under pressure, I think he can't perform. I think that's what it is.
We have a history of strikers leaving us going on and scoring goals elsewhere. Alex Ravel... and Piggott and all sorts of names from last sort of 10, 15 years. One of the things that was kind of said by sort of Calderwood and Strang and Bonner was just what a good person and presence he was in the squad, Aziz was. Like, said that he gave his all in training, was one of probably like the most sort of committed in training. And there was genuinely a sense of kind of... guttedness about the fact that it didn't work out for Aziz here at the club.
So they were quite happy to let him go, I'm guessing.
Especially if they offered the money for him.
Mm.
Which is,
well, this is, I'm just like balancing those two. Like, if he was really good for the squad and he dedicated himself to training well, then but it wasn't working out.
Yeah, but I guess the thing is that he's good to have around the squad, probably because he's quite a likeable guy.
Yeah.
Sure.
But he wasn't performing. Like, I reckon Graham Norton would be quite good for the squad. Yeah. But you wouldn't sign him, would you?
He'd be great for the pod.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the thing as well is, we let Aziz go, and it means we've gone from having four strikers back down to three. Like, we've kind of gone back to the situation that we've been in all season long. And instead of having Aziz, who is, for all his faults, is match fit, we've now got Alex Jones, who has a bad history record from the last couple of years, and
Heber Murphy hasn't ever scored a professional goal. But I mean, yeah, this is the thing. I mean, now we are looking at three strikers
again,
but they are three strikers that, I mean, they all have working knees. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, Jabo Biro is gone.
Mm. Well, no, isn't Jones's history around his knee?
Good stuff.
That's good. No, it's good. That's,
well, no, the thing is, of all the new signings that came in January, Calderwood and Strang off the bat were like, look, we're not going to get the Prem kids back permanently. We've not got Hepburn Murphy here with a view for him coming to join us permanently. Mm. Ditto Coulson and the other double barrel
Doyle,
name
Hayes, whatever,
from,
Hayes,
from Villa.
Doyle.
The only one who is probably here playing for a contract is Alex Jones. And I don't know, he has looked like he wants to.
I think he looks like a goal scorer. I think that's the sort of player he is. I think, I don't know how much he's necessarily contributed to the kind of overall play, but like, you use Port Vale as the example, and I know it was ruled out for being offside, but
tidy finish,
so comfortable in that situation, and that's kind of what we've lacked. So
he scored goals at a higher level as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. I remember. I think he was at Port Vale before, and then he signed for Bradford, and at that point, I think he was one of the kind of hotter prospects in League One, and obviously injuries have happened since. So I suppose the situation that you can always see happening is that he gets himself fit and scoring goals again, and then Bradford go, thank you very much, we'll keep him, thank you. Mm. We'll be in the same situation, but
well, Bradford could be in our league next year.
Yeah, very possibly.
But I think to be fair, on kind of a slightly more serious note, I think if I'm looking at it now, I think I'd probably take the strikers we've got now over the options that we had
going into August.
The thing as well is, I say we've only got three strikers. We've also got Giovanni Brown, who could be that fourth striker. He could play in that sort of 10 role, couldn't he?
And arguably Reggie Lamb, so...
Yeah.
What else was said? Calderwood talked about how he wasn't surprised that we were, that, you know, as a club, we're in a position that we're in. It's easy to get into a rut when you don't get results go your way. He also said that he didn't feel that League Two had changed too much from when he was here before with Northampton, sort of 10 plus years ago. He also said he liked the kestrel that lives near the training ground. That was an odd takeaway that I took from the from the fans forum, that, you know, Colin Calderwood, bit of a bird watcher.
He's a little bit odd in some of his delivery. I get his post-match interviews every week, and he said something about football not being sexy yesterday and left a really long, awkward pause. And then everyone kind of laughed because they felt they had to. He's just a bit of an odd bloke, but he's doing well. So
these fans forums, then, the view is that these will go forward, and it means we take football speak away from the AGM. So the AGM becomes just a yearly financial overview, right?
Yeah. Good. Yeah, we'll leave the AGM to be a financial shit sandwich.
Yeah. You have to deal with a football shit sandwich.
Yeah, so basically what was said was they wanted the fans forum to, I guess they wanted it to focus on football because things, you know, that's what fans, you know, go and watch, and they don't want it to be, you know, maybe focused on the politics and the backroom sort of dealings of the club, and save that more for, one, the AGM, but two, also the kind of fans parliament route. So Godric Smith spoke very quickly at the start, saying the board have signed that off, and I think timescales, we're looking to get people in elected for next season, and those who are elected would go to sort of board meetings, not the board meetings, but meetings with board members, maybe 3-4 times a season, and they would try and make those transparent, so whether they'd have it kind of streamed or recorded for people to then watch back. So the idea was there would be lots more communication, and we would try and maybe keep certain bits to certain forums.
This is progress, isn't it? Surely
it's everything is in the right direction, really, yeah. Isn't it?
So good to have someone like Godric Smith on the board, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, yeah. That this is his bag, isn't it?
And he's passionate. He cares about it. He believes in it, which is another thing.
And so, I mean, you look at his professional track record as well. Not just in government, and he was a communications manager for the Olympics, wasn't it?
Yeah.
2012 Olympics. You know, it's a sort of thing where this is a small fish, right?
Yeah.
Really, like doing the communications and doing all of this side of stuff at Cambridge United is, you know, something you could probably do.
Well, it's a passion project.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was a pretty positive evening overall.
Yeah,
that's the impression I get, and I just think it's taken us a bit of time, kind of post Derry, really, to kind of and post Jez George, to really get kind of sorted out, and it looks like maybe now we've got a structure that we can kind of move forward with, and hopefully kind of, you know.
You didn't like one of the lines from Strang that I tweeted about. So I asked about recruitment and the January transfer window, and asked Strang if it was, did things change because of the change of manager? Because obviously we were told that there would be players ready to go from the start of January, this, that and the other. And Strang said, well, there weren't players lined up, but we had sort of a list of targets and we had a list of names. Hepburn Murphy was on that list. Obviously, Calderwood coming
in. Pre-Calderwood.
Pre-Calderwood, Hepburn Murphy was on our radar, was on our list. We were gonna go for it.
I'm sceptical.
Yeah, I don't believe that's true.
I could see it being true, because if he's playing in the under-23s league, then surely anyone...
True.
Surely just everyone in that under-23s league is on someone's radar.
I would give a lot of credit to Calderwood for that one. But again, I suppose the other way, and I think we mentioned it, Julie, when we did kind of a short pod, kind of mid-January time.
Yeah, about that.
It's traitors.
Mugging us off in the intros.
It seems quite harsh to kind of give Ben Strang all the criticism for bad signings, and as soon as a good one comes along, go, well, we had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's quite
kind of double standard sort of thing. But
I mean, the thing is, I understand exactly why you'd take issue with that. Like, why didn't you? What have you been doing between September and January?
Yeah.
January, while we've been the worst form that we could expect, and you're not lining players up. You should have five players ready to go, in my opinion, or at least, you know, having a list of targets all well and good, but you could spend a week just name everyone in that under-23s league. There's a list of targets. But out and finding the striker that you need.
I'd have just done that in May. That would have been the best thing to do.
Yeah, just sign him before August, probably.
Yeah.
One of the things that Calderwood talked about and Strang was asked about is the fact that obviously this summer could be a very big summer for the club. Mm. I think Strang said there's around 7 or 8 players who are out of contract in the summer. Calderwood said, I'm not thinking about releasing players yet. I want to guarantee that we are safe before I start thinking ahead for next year. So I don't think he'll go down the line of, oh, well, you kept us up, so let's stay loyal. I'll give you another extension and renew your contract. I think this summer will be a really busy one for the club. Strang talked about how having the new players come in January, and admittedly only Hepburn Murphy's starting games, the others are just in and around the squad. He said that he had noticed there's a spark there, and it's kind of put some sort of momentum into the squad in training and things like that, and he's learnt that from not doing it in the summer. You know, you need a constant cycle of at least a couple of new faces coming in to lift everyone up, and
it's like competition for places. Exactly, it raises performances. It's good. So yeah, it's good to have that platform, and we will keep you abreast of everything going on there. Right, we've got some news for you in regards to FansBet, Julian.
Yes. Yeah, so this is so it's a partnership. FansBet are basically, this is the headlines you need to take away from it. If you're going to go and put any sort of bet on this weekend, what you could do is you could either go and put it on with Skybet, Bet365, or any of them, and your money will end up probably in
Murdoch's
pocket. What FansBet do is they're committed to giving money back to their partners. So they've got 130 partners, which are different football clubs. So it might be fanzines at different clubs, charities, all sorts of different things. Basically, what it means is they give 50% back of any profit they make to their partner. So you go into FansBet, you make an account, just as you would do with anything else, and at the bottom you just put Cambridge United as a team you support, and then it'll come up with under the Abbey stand.
That's the important bit, because I think Peterborough are on this, so make sure Cambridge United.
Sure you put that. So then what happens is everyone...
None of the other CUFCs.
Everyone signed up with Cambridge United. Let's say it's 20 people, right? Then the bet that they put on at the weekend, all the money that pretty much that they lose, right? The bets that they lose that go to FansBet, 50% of that comes back to us. And that doesn't mean that we're lining our pockets. What that means is 50% of what we earn then goes back to the community trust.
Yeah.
So what it does is it helps keep the podcast running. It helps to pay for stuff like printing the fanzine, keeping the website running, any sort of expense that we have running this, running the whole of UTAS.
Christmas party,
yeah.
Swiggles haircuts.
And it basically just, it helps us run the podcast, but we'll also give money back to the community trust and to local charities around Cambridge of our choice.
Yes.
So it's a good thing to do if you're going to put a bet on anyway.
Is the Dobblers a registered charity?
Yeah. The Dobblers Trust.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to put on a bet anyway, it's exactly the same as putting a bet on anywhere else. If you win, you win.
And we've got to pay 50% of that, so try not to win.
That isn't true.
I haven't actually read the legal terms and conditions.
Oh, I've been through it, mate. But the other thing is, each week we're going to have a UTAS special bet. So starting from, not Tuesday, but Saturday, we're going to have...
Why not Tuesday?
Because it's too late and I can't be bothered.
It's too tough a game for you
to call. It's too tough a game for you to call, yeah.
You bottled it.
Before Saturday, you'll have a special bet on there on the Yeovil vs Cambridge United game that we decide, basically. Yeah. So,
Why are you picking the bet when Tom is obviously the better at picking bets? Oh, it's us now.
All of us.
Because I am absolutely rubbish at betting. Actually, that's probably quite a good thing, so that means that...
We actually win.
Are we asking people to put ridiculous bets on?
People to put on ridiculous 10-0. Bets and we can profit off you. So. Yeah.
Just go and bet whatever you think.
Mitt off first goal.
Yeah, do with your
500-1, £50 minimum bet.
Just while we're on...
over 0.5 Cambridge goals.
Ooh, mental. Sick burn. But while we're on that community kind of thing, just a shout out to Friday the 1st of March at the club. They're doing the sleep out that me and Jordan participated in last year. It's
you did it this year?
Jimmy's and Street Child United. I got a leaflet shoved in my hand from a guy I saw last year, and he was like, I'm looking forward to seeing you there. So potentially, yeah.
I was going to let other people have an opportunity this time.
Yeah.
Because numbers are limited, so...
They are. I'm going to revisit that this week.
So if you go, Julian, you do it, mate.
But yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, it was cold last year, wasn't it?
It was just as the Beast from the East was about to start.
Yeah.
They've pushed it back a week, haven't they?
They have. So yeah, Friday the 1st of March, get yourselves. You can register online. It's for Jimmy's and Street Child United, both very noble causes. So yeah, get yourself down there and you can donate to people who are doing that too. Right, let's move on to the questions.
No, let's not move on to the questions. Let's going to Posh. Let's go up the road.
I'm sorry, yeah, let's take a short trip
up the road. I've been waiting ages
for
this.
Sorry, I can't believe I glossed over that.
Wait, do you know what? When we started this podcast, I think Steve Evans was in charge there, and one of the first things that we said is, this could be painful for a little while, because they might well run away with League One and go back up to the Championship, and we'd be in a similar situation where we're again very much in their shadow. But what we also said to that was, when this falls apart, it is going to be fucking glorious. So since we've last recorded, Evans is gone. And better than that, I think, Barry Fry's gone because he's been found guilty of some breach in some betting terms.
So have you heard exactly this? What I've read that he actually did is actually quite clever.
Did he sign up to FansBet? Because that is a clever thing to do.
So what he did was I think this is before last season. Correct me if I'm wrong at any stage. Before the start of the season, under the name Peterborough United, he put £400 on Jack Marriott to be the top goal scorer in League One. The returns for that is the exact money that is on Jack Marriott's contract as a bonus if he is the top scorer in League One. So basically, if Jack Marriott, so it returns something like £25,000, I think, and that is on his contract. Your top goal scorer is £25,000. Top goal scorer bonus, right? So basically, from Peterborough United's perspective, they spend £400 and they save 25 grand. Yeah, I can't remember the exact figure. And then he also did it with Peterborough to get promoted. So the club's every player's bonus,
promotion bonus,
was about £1 million overall. So what he did is he went and wagered £4,000 of the club's money to go up so that if he won, they'd pay...
Terrific. Absolutely terrific.
They'd pay all the squad bonuses through the betting money.
He's absolutely unbelievable.
He's exactly an evil genius, but like a bad one.
I mean, also, like, the thing is, and I think he put it on under Peterborough United's name, and you think, mate...
How's it taken this long?
Yeah, how's it taken? Was there someone in Coral taking a £4,000 bet? Thinking, hang on,
you can imagine Barry Fry walking up to the booth at Coral. He scrawled on it, Jack Marriott, top goal scorer, with one of those shitty little pens that you get in the bookies. He's gone up there. He's probably been in the bookies all afternoon watching, like, Kempton or something. And he's gone up there, and he's got out a big, fat brown envelope and just pulled out £50 note after £50 note after £50 note.
I love this as well, sorry. He told the panel he had been a prat.
And the panel did not disagree. I mean, it's a great story and it's couldn't happen to a nicer bloke.
We should get him on a podcast.
I'd love to chat.
Do you know what? I've seen a couple of, I think, semi-serious suggestions that he should join Cambridge.
No.
Yeah, I've seen that as well, yeah.
Oh,
there's no way. I think what should happen is, me, Jordan, as the oldest member of the podcast team...
I've hated him the longest, yeah.
Yeah. We should set up a charity boxing match. I think that's the best thing. Jordan versus Barry Fry.
Then we can start putting wages on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Put it
Jordan's
under the name UTAS.
Pod bonus could be paid for.
Well, talking of boxing, the other funny thing about Peterborough is they've got Darren Ferguson back in charge.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I like that. Yeah.
They lost to Grant McCann's Doncaster Rovers the other week, who obviously they fired for Steve Evans.
Like,
it's superb.
It's the circle of life, isn't it?
Why don't they just not sack Ferguson next time? Why don't they just say, do you know what? You're going to come back.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it. Oh,
I mean, it's great.
But it's all right. Sean Derry will get it in the summer. Yeah. So
all we need now is for McCann to need to leave and then they will plummet back down and it'll be delightful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Glorious. I just thought we should get that one in, Jack. Should we move on to the questions?
No, it was absolutely worth it, more than worth it. Great content. Right, so on to the questions. Just a few questions for you. Thank you for them. Get them on the Twitter.
That's great. At Abbey Stan Pod.
Yeah, at Abbey Stan Pod. The Twitter. Send them in and we would love to hear from you. Right, Jake Samuel Bonham says, if we stay in League 2 and have a full rotation of playing staff, do you think Calderwood can get us challenging for promotion?
Yes, and then I have £400 on it.
£4,000.
Wow.
Easy.
That was savage. Good.
Also, what's this if we stay in League 2?
Yeah, I think...
Come on, man. Come on. Yeah. I actually quite like the word of that question, because it's like, if we can just about scrap to safety this season,
scrap survival,
can we go forward and piss the league next year?
I genuinely think, though, if you play in like we have done this year, MK Dons aside, then they will be there or thereabouts. But then it's about keeping for a whole season.
It's also all
free.
About what we do this summer, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Calderwood's going to have, I think, a very, very, he's got a very specific way of playing, and you let him go and sign the players that he wants, I'd feel pretty confident. I just can't scrape the feel, get rid of the feeling that this summer, I think I probably said a very similar thing just before this summer about Joe Dunn. I might have said those exact words. He's got a very specific way of playing. If he goes and gets the players that he wants, then we'll be challenging for promotion.
Yeah.
He should have a better budget, though, because would imagine that the people that are likely to leave, your Beerays, your Fords, your Hallidays, are probably on the better money in the club.
True. Yeah.
So you should have more of a budget option.
This all comes down to the question, have we learned from our mistakes? I think it all comes down to have we learned from the mistake of last summer and what happened there? If we're going to, we've just got to put all the money that we can behind Calderwood and the players that he wants. And, you know, I want to say yes, but I also really don't.
Would you take us challenging in the playoffs if we stick to the sort of the grinding out the 1-0 wins like we do against Port Vale?
I don't think the football's been that bad. Like, it's not been like Derry era, just crap every week, has it? I think it's been okay. Like, there was a period against Tranmere where the ball was on the floor for about 20 seconds.
Oh, no.
And we were looking at each other like, just hoof it. But no, to be fair, just kind of on that point, like, League Two football, it's never going to be great, is it? And this idea that sort of grinding out 1-0 wins is somehow sort of a bad thing is pretty interesting.
To be honest,
but certainly, I think, reasons to be kind of cautiously optimistic. I think the one thing that you would say is that we've got a different level of coach to what we had going into this season. Mm-hmm. So definitely reasons to be optimistic, but we said literally exactly the same thing this time last year. So we'll see.
It's pretty much impossible to answer that question, even backing ourselves.
The answer is, like, we are definitely capable of challenging for promotion, full stop.
Yeah.
But the caveat to that is what we do this summer, and kind of how we end the season as well. Like, you never know. If we do end up in a bit of a relegation, if for whatever reason we've got a tough March coming up that we've mentioned, if we find ourselves back down there, it can impact how the whole outlook on the summer. So it's a big fat maybe. Tell you what, Jacobson, I don't know.
Yeah. Ask us after this week.
Ask
the Cheltenham
else.
And Yeovil games.
Yeah.
Barry Cry has been in touch and says, after Deegan called Jabbo a bear, what other animals would you use to describe United players? That's a great question.
So this came about because there was an interview in the week through Jim O'Brien, or Brian?
Notts County player,
who on his debut was the game against us, and he elbowed Abire, I think it was in the first half. And apparently Abire was after him in the tunnel at the end of the game, wanted to express his opinions on the incident. And apparently Deegan and O'Brien know each other from a previous club, and after the incident, Deegan just said to him, "You've angered the bear," which I think is brilliant. The fact that Deegan's going around,
I was gonna say, Deegan
stirring
himself.
It up.
Deegan, if Deegan were an animal, he'd be a little sort of terrier, wouldn't he? Like gnashing, like little.
He's like a honey badger.
What? What a mental comparison.
Well, they're really like,
I thought we were doing like cats and dogs.
The reason, right?
It's raining
is because
honey badgers.
They're really like virile and violent, and like they kill snakes and stuff, and they're like,
you're talking about a mongoose?
No, they're angry. It's a honey badger, mate. I've seen a documentary about it.
He's more of a Rottweiler, isn't he? Don't you think?
No, it's not big enough to be a Rottweiler. It'd be like a yappy smaller
that's
dog.
What I'm saying, like a little terrier sort of.
Well, that's not what you said.
On the Notts County game, maybe Greg Taylor as a salmon. That was quite a big lead.
Yeah, that's nice. A salmon.
Connor salmon.
Is there any ginger?
I was going to say, is it racist to say that Brad Halliday is a red panda because the red hair?
Yeah.
They're quite quick.
Yeah. Scared. Red pandas get scared all the time.
Harrison Dunk.
He's like a unicorn.
Well, oh, great, yeah. Well,
I was gonna I think Barry Cole is more like a unicorn. Just mythical.
Uni knee.
Wow.
One knee.
That was good.
Harrison Dunk, when he runs, kind of sticks his neck out, which makes him look a bit like a kind of a lizard gecko type.
No. What's the thing? The roadrunner thing?
Meep, meep.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it cartoon?
Yeah, but what animal is that?
It's a bird.
Is it? Bird.
Well. Yeah.
I'm sure it's got a more specific name than bird.
I think it's called a roadrunner.
Do you know what?
No, the roadrunner's the other one, isn't it?
No, that's Wiley Coyote.
Wiley Coyote, yeah. Absolute geese.
Do you know what? It's recently gone past a year since we did our first ever podcast. And in that year, we have talked some shite.
Yeah, it's just the level of content quality.
Yeah, this,
the last sort of 2 or 3 minutes or however long it's been, this comfortably sits top of that list.
It is going to be insane. Anyway, let's leave that question for now. We'll revisit it, of course, in future pods. Amalou Benham with the last question then. What is the worst away day in League Two?
I'm going to say Yeovil. I've not been, but I'm going on Saturday and I know exactly what it's going to be like.
No, Yeovil's all right. It's not the end of the world.
Have you been?
Yeah. I actually did it on a Tuesday.
Is it the open terrace, though? That was what we were talking about before.
You kind of, okay, well, so when we went, you get in the side of the stand that runs along the pitch, which has got a roof. But I don't know what it would be like on a Saturday. Morecambe for me.
Morecambe's
obviously
dive. Not only distance and horrific and just everything about it.
Do you remember that taxi driver we had in Morecambe that year?
I do, yeah.
It was just like so sad.
He was dreaming of a move to Blackburn because he's.
Wow.
Costa del Blackburn. Yeah,
actually, I'll tell you what, and it was an interesting one of FGR because it is.
I have not been so since they redid the stadium.
Middle of nowhere, but it's really nice around there.
Good food.
Good. Well, yeah.
Cheltenham, I had an away day at Cheltenham and it was so cold. It's just my worst away day memory. Was the coldest day and you get bottlenecked go walking through that like housing estate to get to the ground. You're walking down a big long street.
I remember going to Cheltenham that year, just the day after the Cheltenham races finished.
Yeah. God.
And like every pub still had like massive marquees and stuff. Mm. So it was weird. It was a weird feeling in the town.
Yeah. That was the day when there was a Bruce Forsyth cut out in our away end.
Yeah.
Dressed in a CP company hat and a Cambridge United scarf, which was pretty interesting.
Great. Yeah.
What a great way to end it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Tom Walker, thank you.
Thank you very much, mate.
Julian Roberts.
Lovely to see you, mate.
You too. Jordan Warland.
Thank you very much.
I've been Jack Swindlehurst. We'll be back with you soon.
That was brilliant.